Hello, Freedom Nation. It's Jeff here once again with another episode of the Freedom Nation podcast. And on today's show, I have Stone on with Wooden Stone, and you're going to learn a lot about what he did to build a unique business from his own passion. He started out as a woodworker and learned to kind of build a business as a result of that. And what he does today is he teaches other woodworkers to do that very thing, how to be able to turn what for most people is a hobby into something that could be a business in the end. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on in just a second.
Welcome to the Freedom Nation Podcast with Jeff Kickle. On this show, Jeff shares his expertise in financial and retirement planning from a different perspective. Planning for your Freedom Day, which is the first day that you wake up and have enough income or assets and do not have to go to work that day. Learn how to calculate what you need, how to generate income sources, and listen to interviews from others who've done it themselves. Get ready to experience your own Freedom Day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Stone, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. How about you, Jeff?
I am fantastic. Glad to have you on the show. Really looking forward to this because I am a woodworker and love this stuff. So, and did very much kind of the original start that you had. I did start off working for a carpentry shop when I was very young and then went on to other things. But I've always had it in my heart to say, man, it's a wonderful profession, and it's just fun to be covered in sawdust every day.
Yeah, I agree. I say even on the bad days, we still get to make money in the wood shop.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So why don't we start off? Tell us a little bit about your story. How did you get to where you're at today?
I started out, my father was a general contractor, and started out cleaning up job sites pretty much as soon as I could walk around on them. Rural Michigan. So that was probably a little bit earlier than I should have been. But, first miter saw cut was around 7, but we were using power tools and tractors and all kinds of stuff. That's a piece of growing
up. Who cares about OSHA? We don't need to worry about that stuff.
Once I got out from underneath his wing, I started, I tried a bunch of different things. And then I ended up landing in a trade show booth shop. And that was, the economy was just starting to take a turn there in the mid 2000s, and I needed to feed a family, and I knew that that was a way that I could do it. Then we moved away from Las Vegas and up to Seattle, and then got a job in a couple of cabinet shops because everything was starting to close down. That one year, I went through 4 shops, I think, cabinets and fine furniture. Yeah, it was brutal. I talk about that in the book too, but it's also like now that's one of the things that has helped me because I have so much experience in seeing a bunch of different ways of how to do things. Yeah. And then those were all in like multi-million, deca-million size shops. I think the biggest one was around 30 million. And I didn't know how unique that was until I started working in smaller shops. And I would ask, why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? And with, you know, there was 2 shops in particular. One was a residential cabinet shop and the other one was a general contractor that hired me to build out their cabinet division. They were both right around that like $500,000 mark. And within a couple of years of just starting to implement some of these things that I thought were normal, but didn't know otherwise, cause my perspective was messed up. They were dancing around that $2 million mark within a couple of years. So it started to dawn on me like, hey, maybe I had seen something because of my experience, not because I came up with these ideas on my own. And then I took while I was working for that last general contractor, I started a side hustle doing some cutting boards and then working at Woodcraft and then started teaching at Woodcraft too. So that's where I do most of my live teaching. And I was seeing the same problems that a lot of woodworkers were coming up with and realizing that, hey, all these things are, there's a lot of things that those larger scale shops do. Some of them you can only do at scale, like buying large amount of materials, for a discount. But there's a lot of stuff that you can do on a smaller scale. It's just you don't typically figure them out until you need to. So you hit a bottleneck in growth. Or, you know, you don't build a $30 million shop in 2 or 3 years. That takes decades or sometimes generations. So, you know, over that course of time, you see a lot of different things. And then, you know, something you might only see once every 5 years, but it's a really big problem. Okay, we need to put some things in there to protect us from that, or an opportunity. It can go both ways. But those things started to play, you know, compiling those in a way that you could use on a smaller scale. And then I ended up, much like what happens in the book, I ended up going out on my own. And that's when I actually started writing the book. I stumbled, it was only intended to be a side hustle. And then I stumbled across an opportunity that made sense. How a lot of small contracting companies start as a, you know, hey, I'm just looking for some weekend work. And then the weekend work takes over your life. And now you have a business. So the guy I was working for.
Then you reach that first phase of, it's like, hey, it's maybe me and one other dude. And we're chasing our tails around and can't get to that next level of being able to hire somebody else.
Yeah. So then I was even able to talk about that. So I started writing the book when I did that. And then once, the side hustle started with $5,000 and 20 hours a week that I was putting into it. And this year in contract, we have over $1 million. It's been 2.5 wow. years. So it was just fantastic. The same, but it's the same process. Like it's all, you know, finding... working for, you're looking for accounts, not jobs. You know, jobs are a good thing. You want to eat, but we're looking to nurture relationships that keep bringing us back work. It's the same process and procedures. So I did it, you know, once I did it two times with other companies with their money, I did it with my money. And then now that I'm seeing it play out, you know, we have 8 employees on payroll with health insurance and all the good stuff that everybody needs, 401ks and whatnot. So it's successful and we have a sustainable business. It felt like, okay, we can go ahead and print it now that, I've actually proven that it's the same thing over and over
again. Yeah. It wasn't a fluke where other people's money was involved. Now it's, I actually use my own money and your body to do it.
And there was stuff that I didn't know about, until I went out. There's experiences that you get as an entrepreneur that entrepreneurs don't always talk about, like the emotions that come with it, or, you know, because like who else understands it? Either you have people that are employed, which there's nothing wrong with, but they're not going to understand some of that stuff. And then, or you have other entrepreneurs that are busy and they don't really have time to help you with your feelings, you know? So they want to, you know, they're, you know, but everybody's busy.
Yeah, they care about you, but it's like, hey, I've got other stuff to do here. I don't have time to mess around. Yeah.
My hair's on fire too.
I have emotions too, and I'm feeling them too.
Yeah. So that's the quick kind of down and dirty progression that, you know, there was a lot of successes. Well, my buddy and I, we call them wins and lessons, but there was a lot of successes and quote unquote failures along the way. But ultimately what I've come to understand is that those failures are really just lessons that they hurt in the moment, but years later, like, or sometimes not even years later, they start paying dividends because you learn that. And that's one of the things, that's probably the biggest thing that I hope to pass on to other people, is failure is a part of the game and are what most people call failure. It's very normal. It's actually more common than the success.
I'm right with you too. And I hate that term failure.
Yeah.
Because let's say you failed and you learned nothing about the process. Okay. That's a failure.
Right.
But if you learn something from it and you take that and use that for the future. Now, if you keep making the same dumb mistake, then that's a failure.
Yeah.
But if you take, if you learn something and it's like, oh, okay, well, don't do that. Let's try this next time, or we're going to see this one coming next time and we're going to tack around that a little bit, or we're not going to fall for the same thing. Then that's that lesson learned. And that's just part of the game.
Yeah. Or a lot of times you try out an idea and it doesn't work in that environment at that time. And then a year later you stumble across maybe an architect that's like, hey, have you ever had an idea about how to do this thing? Yeah. I got all the jigs set up. I have all the tooling. It just didn't sell last time.
It just was terrible the last time I tried this.
Let's do it. Now I've got it all figured out for,
trust me, man, I could get this thing done in no time because I've been thinking about this forever. That's awesome. Yeah. But I mean, like I said, once again, you know, I had a project I was working on recently where, you know, I made a proposal to a client and, you know, a potential client, and it just didn't work out. But I'm like, I don't see that as a failure or a non-sale. I was like, I needed to do all that to build this thing to begin with. So might as well have used a real situation to do that. And now next time I'm in that situation, boom, I'm ready to go. I mean, I've got everything built for it. So.
Yeah. And it never, you know, it never ceases to amaze me how many of the for sure going to start tomorrow gigs fall apart. Yep. And then Absolutely. How many of the deals that died 6 months ago come out of nowhere with a check and they're like, hey, can you get me on the schedule tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. Okay. And they come out with a really big check because they know I'm pressing you because I've got to get this project done right away. And here's a really big check to make you do that. Okay.
Yeah. So like, the idea is to get in the game and stay in the game so that you can capture those opportunities when they're there, and when they're not there, get better so that you can capture more opportunities as they arise. Like,
And I think you're right too. The other side of it too is, you know, instead of looking for jobs, which you've got to do that at the beginning, but starting to build those relationships with the architects, with the builders that can bring you in over and over and over again. You know, because it's going to be hard to get them the first time because you got to build their trust. You've got to show that you're going to deliver on the project. But when they have somebody that can deliver on the project with the quality that it is, boom. I mean, they're just going to keep coming back to you over and over again.
And that's exactly what I mean by accounts, not jobs. It takes time to build those. But if you look at these large multi-million dollar shops, they usually have about 3 to 5 main general contractors, architects, designers that they've been working with for years. And it does start out small. My main client, it was a security desk it's a large scale facility. It was a $7,000 project, which at the time was a big project for us for the size of our company. But I had done $500,000 projects working in other shops. And we just did, it was about $210,000 job with them. And the deal was closed over text. We signed paperwork after that, of course, but like a lot of stuff now we're moving so fast. It's speed of trust. You know, once you develop those relationships, things can move really fast. And all you want to do is be able to build yourself and your shop and your abilities to deliver when they ask. That's the big thing. But always be connecting. ABCs of sales is always be connecting, because you never know who's who and who's going to turn into what. So just help everybody.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes it might not be something directly right now today, but they're going to remember you later on.
Totally. Yeah. Or they might not have the budget for it, but their parents do, or vice versa. They might not have the budget, but their kids do. You know, like it's... Yep.
In the wealth management space, the largest client I ever landed was because I sat down with his daughter to set up an IRA account for her. And I took 30 minutes. I mean, longer than I normally would, but I took like 30 minutes with her, got her set up, made her feel really good that she was doing this. And next thing, the guy comes to me and he's like, hey, you took care of my daughter, which I appreciate. I want you to take care of my stuff. Because if you put as much thought into that time period, you know, that you gave to her and made her feel so good, I know you're going to take good care of my stuff. Boom.
Absolutely.
You know, biggest client I ever won. You know, so right. I think you got to do that.
And you may have experienced this in your own business, but just about every entrepreneur that I talk to, their lucky break, their big break was not in the business plan.
No.
So like Absolutely get in the game. Not. Like, I mean, you want to have a rough plan and get going and not just, you know, go in blindly, but like get playing the game, whatever your particular practice is, because the thing that my big break was from a student that took a couple of classes from me. And I had no idea that they were a big player at a large facility. And that's since blown up into two large facilities. And we're looking at a third. So they keep us busy, you know, so it's the same thing happens with builders. I just did this tour through the Midwest. And there was a guy that he was a CNC guy with metal. And so he bought a CNC because his passion was wood. That was at his house, and he's been messing around with it part time for I think 4 years. He said, and he finally
buys a CNC machine for their house.
He's been messing around with it for 4 years. He got a general contractor. They had just done their first job, and he's like, you know, if it's going to be 4 years in between jobs, I was like, no, that's the moment. Just wait. He's going to come back to you, and he knows the pointers, and you know, just hang tight. Your name's going to start to. You've broken through. Just hang tight. Yep. He was like, oh, okay. So, I mean, it was cool to be able to help those people on that tour, but also like, that's a great example of, it takes a while and then you get one, and then it takes a while and then you get the second one. And then people look at you in 10 years and they tell you, oh, you're so lucky. Oh, okay. It was all luck.
I'm a 10-year overnight success. You're right. That's awesome. So, you know, when you, let's say there is that person that is a hobbyist out there, and they read your book and they're like, you know, this is really cool. What are some of the concepts that you have in there to kind of take somebody, let's say, from a hobbyist to that next step? Let's say they're not going to build a building, but you know, that next step for them, what would that be?
I think the first thing that I want to emphasize is to give yourself grace throughout this process. We tend to be our own worst critics. And that's a big thing, you know, give yourself permission and set yourself up to allow hiccups in the road. Okay. That goes for any business, but you know, you're getting into woodworking also, you're trying to learn three different things. For most people, you're trying to learn how to woodwork and then woodwork at a professional level and then also be an entrepreneur all at the same time, which is a lot. So give yourself grace and understand that we're all out here making mistakes every day. And that's a piece of the game, is surviving, surviving the hiccups so that you can get those big spikes that come in. And then the second one is really get started, like just start messy, and start to figure it out, because what you think you're going to do today, you know, if you start to follow the market, and that's a big one too, following the market, not necessarily building what you want. That's a piece of making money, especially with woodworking, is you're making things that the market wants to buy, as opposed to things you want to make and trying to get the market to buy them. But if you're doing that, what you end up doing is typically not what you think you're going to be doing. Like my background is fine furniture and commercial casework and some high-end residential casework. I ended up with commercial casework in healthcare facilities because we found a niche with some certifications that ends up happening, and we can do a fast turnaround. So the hospital rooms being down is a big problem, and we're able to turn around small batch custom cabinets really quickly.
Okay.
And that's since blossomed into other trades as well, you know, drywall and all kinds of stuff. But, you know, it's not as glamorous as some of the other stuff that I've done. You know, I've built $100,000 dining room tables, but I like eating and I like a warm bed. So we'll go ahead and do that.
You got the money, honey. I got the time. So. Yes.
And I think that's the biggest hurdle that I see a lot of woodworkers that are trying to take this from a hobby to making money with it, is you want to follow the market. And get started. Don't spend a bunch of time trying to make it perfect. It's never going to be perfect. I've worked in multi-million-dollar shops, and they have meetings every week about things that could get better. And that's after 30 years of building something. So, you know, that is just a piece of the puzzle, is you're always going to see holes. And typically what I do is, when we get slow, we fix those. And when we're busy, we make a list so that when we get slow, we can fix them and level up for the next push. I mean, those are the big ones. And also keep an open mind to new technologies. And it is, you know, if we're talking about woodworking as a therapy or as a hobby, that's a different conversation than if you're talking about woodworking to make money.
As a profession.
Yeah.
So where are some of the places that you, as a business owner, entrepreneur, network, or, you know, woodworker/construction person, where do you network at to find these clients?
The National Home Builders Association is a good spot to meet other contractors. It's also a good spot for smaller scale companies to get health insurance early on. Okay. So something to take note of. Woodcraft is a great spot because they are franchised owned. So they tend to be more of a community, has been my experience. Your woodworking guilds are going to be good spots. Once you become known as the woodworker in your community, there's a lot of, you're going to have a tough time keeping up with the phone calls. It does switch to a spot where you're filtering the clients and the jobs versus the other, you know,
It's different from being a carpenter. Okay, that's, you know, it's a skill and all that. You have a very refined skill that you have, and there's not very many of you that are out there usually in any conversation.
Agreed. And then, so there's also, I would look at, networking for designers. So AIA, is where architects are meeting and designers a lot of times. So those type of networking events, to help, you can also do what's called a lunch and learn. So architects, for their AIA credits need to get, continuing education. So you can do what they do, what's called lunch and learns, and somebody will come in with a certified program where they actually get the continuing education credits, CEUs. But you don't necessarily have to provide that. They're used to sitting in a room. Usually how it looks is you're going to buy like Panera bread for 10 people and go in and talk with them about, I would set up a program, something around like maybe exotic woods or different types of furniture, maybe different types of hardware. So talk to them about soft close versus self-closing versus, you know, free swing, those kinds of things, because these are all things that they're looking to incorporate in their, how they build things out. So things like, hey, if you're going to be stacking a bunch of paper on something, you don't want to take your shelves over 24 inches because they'll start to warp, or you want to double them up. All that information helps them and also establishes you as an expert. And usually what that turns into is by the end, a couple of them are saying, hey, I'm working on this project. Can you take a look? Now you got a conversation started. Yeah. You want to make sure that you're able to handle that. If you're doing it on a smaller scale, I would say get into a farmer's market or go start looking at farmers markets and makers markets before you get into them. I really like this if you've never worked at a professional level, because it's really forgiving. Because if you want to do like, say you can set your own goals for the market, and if you can't hit them, nobody's the wiser. Like, hey, I want to take 25 cutting boards to this market. If you only get 22 done, it doesn't matter. It matters to you. And you also start to gauge what you're actually capable of. And then that is because that's the biggest thing that architects, designers, and general contractors, where the big money in this industry is at, they're looking for every, once you get into the room and you get the project, the expectation is you can build the thing. What really gets you the project is being able to protect their downside. So what's the chances that you're going to deliver this on time, under budget, with no warranty issues? And you're going to have to start building that track record and resume for yourself and for your company to be able to do that. You know, they're probably, if you've done $10,000 jobs, they're probably not going to give you a $300,000 job. You got to kind of 10 to 25 to 50. We got a 75. You work up over the years, and we have this shop with 10 employees, and we've done these projects. Oh, okay, we'll give you a shot at the $250,000 project.
Yeah, and once again, you're, you know, a 10-year overnight success when it comes to that.
You get to a spot where, I've heard it said, you know, the work is working on you while you're working on it. The goal almost becomes like, how can we level up the business and how can I level up my skills? And the side effect becomes the networking and the money at the end of the day. So we look for projects where we can take small risks to grow our skills, and we look for projects that we can quickly turn around. What we don't want is big risks. It's the other thing that I started looking at, you know, 10 years ago, I was told this by much older and wiser people, and I completely ignored it. And then when I paid attention, lo and behold, it works. Look at the downside first. You know, before you take on any project, because once word gets out that you're a woodworker, it's a niche market. And if you're skilled, they're going to throw a lot of things your way, and just make sure that you can deliver on time, under budget, without warranty issues. So under promise, over deliver.
Absolutely. Awesome. What's new that you're working on right now?
So we started doing some online courses. I put one out for the book for Garage Shop Income, so that people that couldn't make it to Woodcraft, it has a lot more information than what's in the book. And some people are more visual. We're getting ready to put out a newsletter. We're going to do a monthly newsletter. And then I have some courses that are not about making money, but about actually doing projects. So we're going to do our Drunken Cutting Board is the one we're actually filming that on Thursday. So that'll be up by the end of the month. So that's on the social media kind of training side. On the business side, we just picked up another large facility, about 1.5 million square feet. So stuff that needs to be taken care of and tenant improvement type stuff. So we're developing some of our crew into leadership positions, and I am a busy guy.
Yeah, I bet. Well, hopefully you'll be less busy if you can get the other guys up to speed and let them handle some of that.
Yeah, they're super sharp and they care about the company. So my expectation is it should happen pretty quick.
I love it. Love it. Start looking at the exit, man. all right. Well, let's transition into the fast five questions. Okay. All right. First question. You wake up in the morning. Business is gone. You have $500 in your pocket, laptop, computer, place to live, food and clothing. What are you going to do first?
Depending on locale, if I'm in a major city, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go get a job. I'm going to go, if you put out 10, if I were to put out 10 things with my resume, I would expect a few people to call me back. I would go get a job, even though that sounds weird. $500 is not enough bankroll to operate. So I'm going to go get a gig building for somebody else. And then I'm going to get a second gig at like a Woodcraft or a Rockler. And I'm going to monetize every minute that I can until I can get a bankroll up so I can go back out on my own.
Love it. Love it. I like that. That attitude for it is just awesome. Sometimes going and getting a job is not a bad thing.
No, I don't think there's a particularly anything wrong with either employee or being an entrepreneur. It's just different. And both have good and bad things. But also, like, you know, if you're not below anything and you're not above anything, then it's hard to run out of work. So you're always going to be able to eat.
Yeah, absolutely. What is the biggest business mistake you've ever made?
I would say I have two of them. One was a bad hire that I made. I was infatuated with a resume and I didn't listen to my instinct about the character. I ignored all of that and said, well, the resume would help out, and that didn't. So I since learned that lesson. The other one was I got a little bit overextended, and I thought I had hit burnout before, but I actually hit burnout, and I now know the biggest difference. And that one, it got pretty serious. So I'd say it was a big business mistake. Fortunately, nothing bad happened with the business, but some stuff started to show up with my health that I was like, ooh, that's not so good. But a real burnout was like, we were on a walk and I was like, hey, I need to lay down because I'm going to fall asleep in like 3 minutes. Like I'd never experienced that before, but I thought I'd hit burnout before. So be careful about that because you'll get overextended. And then also better to, this might be a little bit hypocritical, but better to work more and be patient about that hire than to make a bad hire. They're really expensive.
As one of my very good friends always puts it, sometimes you see eagles and you end up with chickens.
That's a very good way of putting it.
All right. What's a good book that you'd recommend for our audience?
I like Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. Yeah. That really opened my eyes to just owning my part of the situation. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit extreme. He was a Navy SEAL officer. So the guy that's, trying to manage people while they're getting shot at, but also like if you're able to corral people and make them do something under those conditions, you probably know a little bit about leadership.
Yeah. Trying to manage people with massive egos that are getting shot at for a living. So.
Yeah. And another one is Chris Voss's, Never Split the Difference.
Yeah.
And he was an FBI negotiator for hostage negotiator. And it's a really great way to look at negotiating. I think both of those books are great for like starter opening up. Then of course mine, I guess.
I've seen both of them in person, and probably the two scariest human beings I've ever met in my life that I don't really want to meet in a dark alley.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Voss will just pick your brain apart. I mean, he's just scary from that point. And Jocko's just scary, period. I mean, I remember the first time I was introduced to him, I was listening to Tim Ferriss's podcast. And I remember, I will to this day, I will never forget the scariest man I've ever interviewed. And I was like, okay, I got to listen to this. And, you know, then that was right when he was really starting. He had just gotten out of the Navy and he was really starting to get famous. But yeah, it was hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. He's hardcore. But that, you know, yeah, if and when you have to do something like that, that's exactly the kind of person you want to go
that,
to.
That's exactly the person you want running that whole operation. So what's a good tool that you use in your business every day that you might recommend?
So I would say get a bookkeeper earlier than you think. Everybody that I've talked to about that, I waited too long, and everybody else that I've talked to waited too long. They're probably $250 to $500 a month, and they save you so much time, and you can focus more on your business. And you'll find that when you hand that over, your stress goes down and your money will go up, because instead of you focusing on something that you're not good at, you can focus on. And a lot of people think you have to hire a bookkeeper full time. You don't. You pay them $250 to $500 a month, and they sort everything out for you. It actually makes your accounting cheaper. So do that earlier. As far as hard like tools that we use on a job site, get a Festool track saw. I'm not sponsored by Festool, but that is a track saw in general helps you do a lot of things, like cut down sheet good and do a lot of great things. But the Festool in particular holds its accuracy. So I can make a cabinet with a track saw. So it helps you save your back, do a lot of things. You can straight line cut rough lumber with it. So you don't need a joiner. You know what I'm saying? Like it helps you with some stuff instead of having to use a joiner all the time.
Well, and especially at the early point when you may not have the money for a joiner and everything else, it's going to give you a really accurate cut to start with. And yeah, you can find
a lot of bang for your buck on that. Even though it is an expensive tool, you get a lot of bang for your buck on that particular.
Absolutely. Okay. Last question. What is your definition of freedom?
My definition of freedom is I've gotten to a spot where I like working. So it's really interesting. I never thought that I would have said that. So I don't think that I'm going to turn that part off. But being able to, make decisions that I think are best for my family. And that both means the freedom to be able to do that and also the resources to make that happen. Okay. So that's my big thing right now that I'm focused on to achieve freedom is, you know, a good life, taking care of my family and extended family as well, making sure that everybody's safe and sound. And my crew, as it's weird how that happened, but like, I really care about their futures. And being able to help, I didn't think that would, at the beginning of this journey, I was concerned. I had a number in my head and I was like, once I hit that number, then that's going to be it. And now I found, I actually like doing this and I like helping people.
Sure.
So I think it will slow down, from a physical standpoint, at some point. But I think most of it is like just being able to get up and have the resources and the skills to take care of the people that I care about.
All right. Here's my book for you. Clockwork by Mike Michalowicz.
Okay. All right.
Great book. Perfect book for where you're at today.
Okay. What's up?
So basically Mike, in the book talks about, he was in that burnout phase too. You know, he's just working nonstop, and he, you know, prided himself on, oh, I'm a worker. And he, he came to the realization that he couldn't really grow his business if he didn't change how he was growing his business. And it involved him. And in the book, he breaks down, there's four essential activities of a business. You have the doing, of course, you have the designing, you have the, I'm trying to think of the other two. Delegation, and then I can't think of the fourth one, but you know, basically it's okay doing. And when we were solopreneurs, we were doing all the work, we're running the whole show. Then we get to a point where we're like, okay, well, I need some task rabbits to go do some stuff for me, but they're always coming back to you. So we're thinking we're delegating, but we're actually just giving them stuff, and then they keep coming back to us constantly, which we've all experienced. Then you have the delegation of, okay, I'm giving this person responsibility for this. And then the last part is designing, where most of us entrepreneurs should spend most of our time helping to kind of design the business and direct where the business is going. at
yeah,
that
I'd
point.
say we're in the hybrid of probably the last two, I think, a little bit developing that leadership. Another one that's kind of on the same note is Ramsey's new book.
I've seen it. I haven't read it yet, but yeah.
We listened to it when we were on the road. It was really interesting. He broke down, he articulated really well, like from like startup phase, where he calls it treadmill, but it's the same thing, the doing phase. And then all the way to the legacy phase where you're finding a successor and either selling or passing away or whatever it is. It was really interesting how he broke down each different level. So, but I'll check out Clockwork.
I think you'll enjoy it. I mean, all of Mike's books are fantastic. This year I've been rereading them all. I reduced the size of my library, and those are the books that literally those eight books will be the last books I give that are torn from my cold, dead hands. Because Mike's books are just really well. He's just a good writer, and he's kind of goofy. So you enjoy listening to him, and he records his own audiobooks too. So he's just a goofball, but he's just a great entrepreneur. So I love listening and reading his stuff. So.
It's weird when you're talking about like not letting those books go. It's weird how like if you go, you read it and then you go through a couple of years of experience and then you reread it and it's a different book.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
It's different. My God. Yeah. It's really interesting.
Yeah. This year. Well, it's so funny. This year, I'm like, I started rereading his books from The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur through, you know, Profit First and Pumpkin Plan and all those. And I'm reading them and I'm like, did he write this for me? I'm just saying, I mean, because I'm feeling this right now, and he's like, he wrote this for me at this point. So, but highly recommended, and I think it'd be a good fit for you right now, because you're really at that point where you're kind of making that next step, and there's some easy mistakes you can make in that transition point that that you want to make sure that you offset a little bit.
Well, thanks for that. Okay, I'll check it out.
Stone, thank you for joining us today. If somebody's interested in learning about the book, about you, some of the courses you offer, where's the best place to go?
Wood and Stone, spelled STONE.com. Okay. That's my YouTube, my Instagram, our online courses, everything you can navigate from there. Wood and Stone.
Brilliant. And you've mastered branding, which is a good thing. And consistency in your branding. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you're way farther along than a lot of people. We'll go with that. We won't say master, but you're way farther along. All right. Fantastic. Well, thanks for being on the show. Appreciate it. Folks, reach out. I went onto his website and I was just, you know, one, I'm a woodworker, so I really enjoyed it. But a lot of great information on there. So I'd encourage you to go on there. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. Make sure you share it a little bit. And I love comments. So love to hear from you. We'll see you guys back here the very next time.
Thank you for listening to the Freedom Nation podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and all the major channels. Wherever you're listening, please subscribe to the channel and leave a rating and review. If you have friends and family that could benefit from their own Freedom Day, please share with them. Finally, join Freedom Nation by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.